Well, this is Dr. Stanton back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. The views of our guests, and, well, our guest this afternoon, is our good friend Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and where I think we're probably going to find out what is covered in this week's World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. It's nice to be with you as usual.
Well, tell us what you're covered this week.
Well, let's do talk about the Iraq situation. A few retired generals that are lambasting the plan, but generally the news continues to act as stenographers for this administration, giving them plenty of airtime to talk about their little ploys for disinformation. The big trap in the Iraq war of words right now is the word success. The administration is taking maximum advantage of Americans' extreme reluctance to accept failure and is using that failure in Iraq to shame the public and Congress into sinking more money in American lives into this quagmire. Now, of course, now the administration is saying it wants more troops for Afghanistan as well. The more lives we lose there, the greater will be the incentive to, quote, salvage this lost cause. And I think it's a cause made unworthy by our own governments continually seeking provocations which sabotage the very success they claim to seek. You know, Vice President Dick Cheney said it all on Fox News on Sunday when he put the words into Congress's mouth and said, "We have these meetings with members of Congress and they all agree we can't fail in Iraq." Well, you know, once you say that you can't fail, then you're just forced to come up with something that supposedly will give success, but I don't think success is possible there, frankly.
Certainly not the way they handled this thing from the very beginning. They didn't send in enough troops. They wouldn't allow the generals to run the war. And, of course, now it's gone. I mean, before they had a civil war, you might have been able to salvage something, but they have created a situation that's intolerable, and there's absolutely no way to win this. And they know that. It's Vietnam all over again. They didn't let the generals run the war in Vietnam, and they sure haven't let the generals run the war here. And where did Donald Rumsfeld and Dick and President Bush get to be so much smarter than our military men?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, it's actually much worse than Vietnam. In Vietnam, you had an actual enemy. And the worst that the government could do was give them safe havens and rules of engagement, which would allow them to have some advantage. In this war, I'm afraid, we actually have the U.S. government, through its dark side operators, and the British government, through their secret services, actually sabotaging the war effort. As I've repeated on your show before, they allowed the insurgents to have access to tons of explosives. That's where all the explosives are coming from. They had them, allowed them to strip out all the depots where Saddam Hussein had all of his arms, and we just left them unguarded so that they could have access to these. And then you have the things which I've reported on before that were reported in the British press about Iraqis being arrested by American forces, sent to the Green Zone, and then being told, given a car and say, drive this car over to this checkpoint and have your records checked and or otherwise talk to somebody. And on the way, that car explodes, and suddenly we have another suicide bomber.
Oh, they didn't commit suicide. They were suicided.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, you know, even Tony Snow, the president's yes-man spokesman, and President Bush were following this script, I'm sure devised by Karl Rove, saying, it's not enough to criticize the president's plan. It's incumbent upon all those who criticize to come up with an alternative that promises success in Iraq. Well, that's like a catch-22 situation. There isn't any success possible. But by limiting the debate to the word success...
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, and we're talking about what's going on over in Iraq and the fact that we are in an impossible situation there. And, of course, the administration is trying to give the idea we can't fail, we have to succeed. Well, of course, as Joel points out, there's no way we can succeed. We've created an impossible situation. We've allowed, of course, the insurgents to get all of the explosives that Saddam Hussein had accumulated instead of going into Iraq and securing the military supplies. We left them right there for the insurgents. And then time and time again, we've snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory. And unfortunately, now with the Civil War, why it seems that there is absolutely no way we can succeed. And a few thousand more troops at this time is not going to solve the problem. So go ahead, pick the story up there, Joel.
You know, as Josh Marshall said, in real military terms, the president's surge concept is little more than a farce. Set aside the fact, he said, that most of the president's military advisors oppose his plans for escalation. But if we follow what the U.S. Army actually says about counterinsurgency operations, the president's surge doesn't even come close to what our troops need. You know, and he is right. The troops know that the Iraqi forces have so many mixed loyalties that they can never be counted on to clean out the militias. Only a block-by-block presence of occupation forces could stop the violence. Now, that's discounting the fact that the U.S., I believe, and Britain are putting together most of these car bombings, which continue to exacerbate Sunni and Shiite antagonism. I mean, they do these to both sides. They antagonize the Sunnis, blame it on the Shias, and then they antagonize the Shiites and blame it on the Sunnis. And they have this thing down to a well-oiled machine. But only block-by-block presence in these areas like Sadr City could stop the violence and stop and essentially disarm the militia. But that would increase or require troop increase that would be 10 times the troops that the president is proposing. Military experts have told me it would take at least 200,000 troops to occupy Baghdad. And the result would be a doubling or tripling of our current casualty rate. No, it's clear that this proposal is only meant to stall the judgment of the American people, to force the American people to give the administration another 12 months. And I think during this period of time, while we're waiting to see what's going to happen here, that the administration will pull out of their hat a larger war with Iran that can be provoked anytime they want to shift the American focus to a new crisis.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Joel's feeling, and I completely concur, is that this so-called surge is interesting. They never talk about increasing the troops. We're going to surge the troops, playing games with our mind, using foolish little games. But, of course, this is really a prelude to expanding the war. That is the real purpose, is going to war with Iran. But we can't tell the American people that. The American people want to get out of this war. But, of course, once one of our ships has been hit or there's some sort of provocation, it'll be another Gulf of Tonkin. Maybe we'll call it the Persian Gulf incident this time. The Gulf of Tonkin incident did not occur. 58,000 American boys died for absolutely nothing in Vietnam. A million Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, 2 million North Vietnamese. Has anybody ever been held responsible for the fallacious report of the Gulf of Tonkin incident? Long since forgotten. But what we're doing today, concentrating our naval forces, massive naval forces in the Persian Gulf, is laying ourselves open for a Persian Gulf incident that will plunge us into an ever larger war in the Middle East that neither the Iranian people, nor the Iraqi people, nor the American people, nor the British people want. But I believe you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, you know, the American people don't realize that the public, or that almost half of this so-called surge is coming from extending the deployment of troops already in Iraq. As the El Paso Times revealed, it's amazing how all of these things are coordinated. You don't see half of these stories. That's why I try to put it together for everybody in the World Affairs Brief, where I synthesize all of these things. For example, the El Paso Times revealed, quote, "For the first time since President Bush mobilized the National Guard on September 11th, the Pentagon is abandoning its limit on the time a citizen soldier can be required to serve on active duty. Prior to this time, it was 24 months. Thursday, President, or General Peter Pace, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, told reporters that the change would have been made even if Bush had not ordered an additional 21,500 troops to Iraq. Well, that remains to be seen. But now they can be extended for unlimited periods of time. And boy, I'll tell you, that's really hard on employers who by law are required to keep National Guard troops on their payroll, or not on their payroll, but at least keep a slot open for them so when they come back, they can continue to have their job back. And that's very, very difficult when you don't know when they're coming back. Some other poor guy's been hired and he's got to walk off his job when the reservist comes back.
Not only that, but these men did not volunteer to go overseas. I mean, most of them had no idea that they were going to be sent overseas. They probably never would have signed up. But now it's almost like involuntary servitude. And they have their rules. They're going to be in, you know, have to go for 24 months. And then we just suddenly decide unilaterally, we're just going to go ahead and extend it. Too bad about the promises we made you. Promises, you should have been smart enough to know. You could never believe what we told you.
Well, it's true, and even people aren't being allowed to get out of the service on their normal end of termination of their contract. So the United States is using little escape clauses here and there to even void people's termination contracts. You know, I watched Marine Corps General James Jones oil his way across the floor, as they said in My Fair Lady. When he was on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, he was pushing for a troop increase in Afghanistan. He says, "We are so close to success." You know, that's the lure of success again, almost as if everyone's been primed to push this idea of we just need a few more troops and we'll be able to stabilize the Karzai government. Well, you know, Jones is the NATO Supreme Commander and was sent to the White House, by the White House, to Afghanistan and directly back to the U.S., perfectly timing his visit to offer testimony on why we need an increase in military forces in Afghanistan.
We've been there for 6 years. We've been in Afghanistan for 6 years. People have forgotten.
That's right. And even Defense Secretary Robert Gates went over there and said, "My generals have asked me for more troops." And he said, "I'm inclined to support them." As if he didn't tell them that you're going to get more troops whether you like it or not. I mean, anyone wants more troops, frankly, as a military person. But Jones is under pressure in Europe as well. Its people are increasingly displeased with the rising casualties of NATO troops in Afghanistan. And they want out. The Europeans correctly view this as America's debacle, and they want Americans to die for Bush, not Europeans. Of course, U.S. puppet President Karzai has only effective control in a small portion of Kabul, the capital, and there the Taliban are gaining strength monthly in the south. The opium poppy trade is stronger than ever. Of course, Jones talks as if he's powerless to stop the drug lords that have prospered under U.S. authority. But I'll tell you this, Dr. Stan, the U.S. military has not even tried to intervene in the drug trade there. Everyone knows which routes they take over the mountains to Pakistan, another to the Kazakhstan. Why aren't U.S. forces using the same military interdiction tactics they use in Colombia? Why aren't they using the horrible defoliating chemicals on the poppy fields in Afghanistan like they're doing in the cocoa fields in Colombia? You know, the answer is obvious. Not that I'm in favor of those chemicals, but I'm just saying the answer is obvious. The reason they don't is they want this crisis so that they can justify continued intervention and occupation. Furthermore, I am believing that these troop buildups are, both in Afghanistan and Iraq, are so that you have troops there on the ground to be able to do cross-border operations into Iran. I don't think they're going to intend to occupy Iran. They don't have the troops, but they certainly can do a lot of cross-border operations.
But of course, they cannot tell the American people. They never tell the American people the truth. They say one thing, whereas they have an entirely different agenda. That's what's really so reprehensible about this whole thing.
You know, we see the same double standard here playing out in Iran as we see in North Korea on their nuclear weapons arena. One nation is constantly pushed towards war, Iran, while the other is offered complete immunity, North Korea. And North Korea is the more dangerous one. North Korea has the missiles to deliver the nuclear weapons. Iran has the missiles, but they don't have the operational nuclear weapons yet to deliver. So this isn't really blindness or stupidity. It's very much done on purpose, and I think it depends upon where the globalists want to trigger specific conflict. Right now, they're currently working on provoking war in the Middle East, because in doing so, they can engender a high degree of Islamic hatred with a minimum of risk. There's not much backlash at home for doing something in the Middle East. At the same time, they have the tacit agreement of two other world predators, Russia and China, who are waiting to let Iraq, Iran, and Syria fall, but not their darling North Korea. And that's the real reason the U.S. doesn't attack North Korea or give the same threatening gestures toward North Korea. That's why they offer them immunity, because Russia and China basically have told the U.S., hands off North Korea. That's our prime puppet. And they're not willing to let North Korea fall, as they are Iran and Iraq.
Well, you know, I think
why are they...
I was just going to say that, you know, during the Clinton administration, why the American government said to the North Koreans, you know, if you just stop building your nuclear weapons, why, we'll build some power plants for you, and we'll supply with oil and food and the things that you need. And the North Koreans said, sure, fine. And so they kept building their bombs, and we kept financing them right well into the Bush administration. Then when it became obvious that they had violated... But you can't tell me for 1 minute that we didn't know everything that they were doing all during those years of the Clinton administrations and the early years of the Bush administration. And then we said, oh, we're not going to give you any more food or oil now. But we let the South Koreans go ahead and do it. If we control the South Korean government, we've got our troops there. They've been there for 50 years. You can't tell me that South Korea would be financing North Korea without the tacit approval of our own government. So we're financing this very enemy who's sitting up there that we're supposed to be so concerned about.
And we're still playing like China's our ally in all of this. You know, the propaganda comes out daily anytime there's an article about the six-party talks about how China is attempting to pressure North Korea to comply. Nothing could be further than the truth. North Korea is a pure puppet state of China, and they're just taking the United States for a ride on this, and the United States is willingly doing so, obviously.
Okay, we're going to go right ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I thought that was
That's all right.
So significant that people understand we are constantly creating and financing the best enemies money could buy.
You know, there's been more provocations this week in Iraq. Of course, the decapitation hanging of Saddam Hussein's half-brother. The news media claims this was a botched hanging of Barzan Ibrahim al-Tarkuliki, which is Saddam's half-brother. But I'll tell you this, there is no way that hanging by 3 feet with a three-quarter-inch rope around your neck causes the head to be separated from the body. It's intended to break the neck with the jerk, but no known decapitations have ever occurred before with a rope. Now, if you use a wire noose, that's a different thing. But some means other than this was intervened with and used to cause this gruesome scene. I won't describe all the possibilities, but like the former filming and release of the film about Saddam's hanging, I suspect this too was a purposeful provocation for more violence. It's just a little bit too much to believe that you'd get two botched public displays of hanging here meant to provoke the Sunnis, and obviously the first hanging didn't provoke enough Sunni violence, but this one has really raised the hackles of Sunnis.
And so what we're doing is really inflaming the emotions of the Sunni Arabs, not only certainly in Iraq, but really throughout the entire Islamic world. Why would you want to provoke the entire Islamic world against America? Why would you have released those pictures of what happened to Abu Ghraib? Why would you have released the pictures about what happened in Guantanamo? Why would you let it be known that we were torturing the prisoners? We captured many of them, completely innocent people. We can almost hear their screams. Why would you do this, you know, unless you were trying to antagonize the rest of the world? And when you understand that, it makes sense. If you're looking at it from a logical point of view, of course it doesn't. Go right ahead. We've got about 40 seconds.
Well, you know, this hanging decapitation incident pales in comparison with the open provocation going on in the U.S. and Iran about trying to induce Iran to do something stupid. You know, first there's the announcement.
All right, well, hey, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a minute with our special guest today. Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And if you don't read World Affairs Brief, why, you're really not aware of what's going on in the world today. Joel, pick up the story there.
Well, it's interesting to look at what the U.S. is trying to promote here. First, there was an announcement that, quote, the Iraqi government cultivates Iranian ties. Oh, horrors. What are we to think, you know, that this is something that they shouldn't be doing? Obviously, these are, this is a Shiite government dealing with their allies, and we're not supposed to, think that they're supposed to do this. The U.S. Ambassador Khalid Saad chimed in as if on cue, there cannot be and should not be relationships with security institutions of neighboring states that work against the interests of this new Iraq. Well, I've got news for Khalid Saad. The new Iraq government is Shia, you know, and they're natural allies of Iran. What our resident yes man in Baghdad meant to say was against the interests of the U.S.-controlled Iraq. That may be true, although I still don't believe that is, given the degree of provocation the U.S. is guilty of. But Iraq's foreign minister was quite upset with the U.S. raid on an Iranian office in Erbil in northern Iraq. The Iraqi government was in the process of certifying such offices as local Iranian consulates. Now, of course, all that's on hold. Naturally, of course, without providing any evidence or proof, the U.S. claimed it found evidence that the Iranian officials taken into custody in Erbil were working, quote, for Iranian intelligence. Well, why should that surprise anyone? Every U.S. embassy and consulate in the world has a large staff of CIA agents working undercover as embassy or consulate personnel. Of course they're going to have in their consulate people who work for Iranian intelligence. That's their business. And that's what the U.S. does as well. They expect other nations not to have any, do they expect Russia not to have spies in their embassy in the U.S.? They expect Russia not to have spies in the U.N.? It's happened since time immemorial. Now, the U.S., it's wrong to give them privileges. It's wrong to allow them free reign around the United States, certainly that doesn't seem to be the case there. And the military is still holding on to the five Iranians arrested in the raid, I think they're just holding them, basically hoping that Iran will do something rash in order to justify some kind of attack on Iran.
Well, I think
the real question...
Go right ahead.
The real question, of course, is whether the raid was done to halt such Iranian support for the Shiite side of the insurgency, or whether it was done to provoke Iran to war. As time goes on, we shall see that it's the latter that drives U.S. action, not any desire to see violence end, but merely to provoke Iran.
I certainly agree with you, and I'm just so concerned about the implications and so amazed that the average American really finds it so difficult to believe that our government would want to expand this war, over there, despite the fact that only 30% of the American people now support the president's war, and it is a President Bush's war. And even, I think, the majority of the elected legislatures don't support the war, but it doesn't matter what our elected representatives want. It doesn't want the American people want. The people who control the Bush administration have their own agenda. And, of course, I believe it's going to be more war, more death, more destruction.
Well, I certainly agree. I think the president has shown that he's got an attitude, and this came out very, very weak, very, very strongly this week, in this essence, Congress can stuff it. I'm the decider, he says, and it doesn't matter what Congress does. That's what Vice President Cheney said. Doesn't matter what Congress decides, he's the commander-in-chief.
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought. Well, Joel was just saying that it became very obvious this week that President Bush doesn't care what the American people want. He doesn't care what our duly elected representatives want. He has an agenda, and he's going to carry it out. And if it means massive expansion of the war in the Middle East, so be it. After all, he doesn't have to listen to the generals. He doesn't have to listen to the people. He is the ruler of our nation, and that is his attitude. Listen to what he says. Listen to the 60-minute interview he gave last Sunday on 60 Minutes. Fascinating. You need to either watch it up at 60 Minutes or get the transcript and read it word for word. And he, in effect, said, I don't care what the American people want. I'm in charge.
Well, Glenn Greenwald put out an essay, he's talking about the epilogue in his book, emphasizes that the radical theories of presidential power adopted by the administration and applied to general lawbreaking, warrantless eavesdropping, torture, indefinite detentions of U.S. citizens, applied clearly and fully to Iran, and that is these theories, that they were still are the formal adopted positions of the executive branch, absolutely mean that the president has the power to commence a war with Iran, and not only that, but he would not need congressional approval to do so. That Congress would lack the power to stop him even if they tried. He said, quote, as a nation, we can and should engage in vigorous debates over whether the military offensive against Iran is desirable, prudent, disastrous, or just plain crazy. But it is just as crucial that we realize that the Bush administration has embraced theories of executive power that assert that the president has the authority to initiate a military attack on Iran regardless of whether the American people or their representatives in Congress approve. As the debate proceeds, it is necessary to remember that the president believes he is the sole organ in all such matters, and he has full, limitless, and unchecked authority to do whatever he wants.
And, of course, when did we elect an emperor? When did we elect a dictator, through the democratic process? The purpose of the executive is to carry out the directives of the legislature and not to rule the country. And, you know, the thing is that it's only going to be a matter of time before, one of these days they're going to have more troops. And the question was, will they have the draft? I heard some high government officials saying the other day, of course we're considering the draft. After all, do you think we ask these young people, to go down to register the post office, when they get to be 18, just so that they'll know how to get to the post office? And then he sort of laughed, how ridiculous that was. Of course they're considering the draft. And then, of course, one of these days we're going to have to pay for this terrible war and all the things that we've done, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And this war, in my estimation, is totally evil.
Well, Congress had that responsibility to, and they acquiesced to the president, calling this an indefinite war, so that any approval given at whatever time is an approval to keep going for an indefinite period of time. The Constitution does have the weakness of giving the president power to completely run the war as he sees fit, although Congress does have the ability and the power to cut funding to a war just like they did in Vietnam if it ceases to serve the purposes or the interests of the United States. Now, unfortunately, our lame Congress under the Democrats has made it also very clear that they do not intend to cut funding for the war. And so essentially, they're going to go along with this.
In other words, they're going to say one thing. Nancy Pelosi is going to pretend he opposes war, but after all, he is the President of the United States, and we do have to support our troops.
That's right. It's this mantra of support our troops that has been cultivated very carefully by the administration. They're the ones who authorized and directed the military to print up millions of these plastic magnetic stickers saying support our troops, hand them out to military families so that it would catch on around the United States. And so now we have this mentality that we have to support our troops no matter what. I pointed out that laws are such that our troops are not bound to support illegal acts, but even those people who have decided to use the law, like Lieutenant Watada of Hawaii, who refused to go back to Iraq, claiming the orders were illegal, is being prosecuted as we speak, and the judge has just ruled that Watada cannot bring up the fact that the war is illegal. That's irrelevant to his case. Well, that's irrelevant to his case. Heaven help any military person attempting to claim that he's receiving illegal orders.
And because what about when they order you to torture somebody? Well, of course, they're going to go after maybe the PFC and the sergeant, but never after the CIA operatives who told them what to do, never after the officers who told them what to do. And, of course, that's unconscionable. But then, after all, you sacrifice a few of the enlisted people. But the real culprits, going right up to the White House, are unscathed. And on Sunday evening, when they asked President Bush, have you ever made a mistake? He said, well, Abu Ghraib was a mistake. Was a mistake? I mean, who's responsible for what happened? He obviously admits he was. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Joe, go right ahead.
You know, it's my analysis that President Bush has tried way too hard to defy Congress and the courts on issues ranging from wiretapping, privacy, and habeas corpus. The U.S. government has done these things quietly and illegally for years. So why bring them up out in the open and appear to defy the law? Why inflame public opinion with all these signing statements telling Congress how he's going to interpret the law he signed? And almost always those interpretations go against the very intent of the bill he's signing. Those are obvious provocations, in my opinion. And this is equally disconcerting when we consider that Bush had a compliant Congress in the past 4 years willing to give him anything he wanted anyway. So I think the reason was to establish that the president has immunity from law when we're under wartime conditions, to put his role as commander-in-chief above the law and to get the American people used to it, not simply as a legal technicality, but to get used to being under dictatorial power. I think this is a prelude to martial law, which he has power to do now. In essence, what he has done is what Hitler did after the Reichstag fire, when he demanded the Reichstag, which is the name of their parliament in Germany, give him dictatorial powers to deal with the crisis. He's had to be a little more slick here, but it's still using the same provocations, many of them, and I think we're still going to get some more.
Average American says, we could never have a dictatorship here. After all, we're guaranteed freedom. They could never take away our freedom because we're Americans.
Yes. But, you know, it's just like the sleight of hand that occurred this week. You notice that now that he's got an all-powerful, unitary presidential powers, the president suddenly allowed the FISA court to handle all foreign wiretapping cases. This was supposed to be a big compromise engineered by fellow conspirator Senator Arlen Specter. But actually, this simply returns wiretapping back to the status quo, which was the NSA continues to tap all electronic communications at will without a warrant, and the government goes before the FISA court with a few hundred requests every year just to keep up the pretenses of legality. That's the way it is. That's the way it will stay. And everyone can go back to sleep now. Because Bush assures us that FISA court is handling all the wiretap. Well, they're not any coming close to handling it. Just a few token warrants that they put before the court. So nothing has changed despite all of this hoopla. And yet the American people have changed because they have now gotten used to the fact. And they won't forget the president has the power to do anything he wants, protest as we might.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen as we explore what's really going on in the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And Joel, this is the time when we have to ask you if you'll just tell our listeners how they can get a copy of your weekly publication, also where they could go on the Internet to find your daily briefing.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My website is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's worldaffairsbrief.com. It's a one-stop shopping center for an awful lot of information. Most of it is free on the site. My weekly analysis or World Affairs Brief has a modest subscription rate, so people can get a sample copy just by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. If you want a copy of what we're talking about today, just email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com, and I'll be happy to send it out. And if you forget that, just go to worldaffairsbrief.com, and you can read the summary of last week's World Affairs Brief, and then it reminds you, if you want a free copy, to sample what the briefs are like, where to go to do that.
And let me recommend it to you. I read it regularly when it comes in, and I'm looking forward to getting my copy tomorrow. So, and I think it's so important that our listeners understand that the tapping, the phone tapping, the reading of emails and faxes has nothing to do with terrorism. This was going on 20 years before every telephone call in America. Every one of your emails and faxes has been monitored for many years by computers, and they're doing it not only here but throughout the world. It's under something known as Project Echelon, E-S-C-H-E-L-O-N. You can go up on the Internet and read about it. Everybody in the world is furious that we've been doing it. And now they have the audacity to say, why we're doing this to protect you, and we're only, of course, going after those wicked terrorists. And this is the height of hypocrisy. They know that. They just don't want the American people to know. This plan for a dictatorship has been in place for many years. If you have a cell phone, they can listen to it even when it's turned off. Those little chips were put in there long ago. The cell phones have had this long before we ever had a terrorist attack in America, so that they could monitor every conversation everybody had at any time. And why would they do that? They're not interested in terrorism. They're interested in how you think and how you feel, because there are people who have a different worldview, and they want to be able to control everything and everybody. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, there's a lot more on the privacy and wiretapping things. We just found out that Microsoft has admitted that in their new Vista operating system that they have an agreement with the NSA, that the NSA reviewed their entire code and gave them security suggestions. But when you turn over the entire code for this operating system, NSA, that means that the NSA can develop and do anything they want, essentially, to try to put back doors in this to be able to have access to anybody's computer who was using the new Vista operating system.
Well, of course,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's NSA that was in charge of Echelon, the eavesdropping thing that's been going on for 25 years. So we shouldn't be surprised. The NSA, they call it no such agency. It is by far more powerful and more all-pervasive than the CIA, but most people don't even know what it exists.
That's right. And it's, that's one of the reasons why Google, which also has a relationship with the NSA, keeps on file every search that every person makes on the Internet. They keep that stuff on computer storage. And why would they go to that extent to never erase any of that? And I think there's because there's a seamless relationship between both Google and Microsoft on NSA. And that means that you don't stop using their services completely. It's just you got to be aware. Everything you do, you need to speak as if it is being taped. The only thing that keeps the government basically from doing anything with a lot with the information is the computing power that they lack to be able to analyze everything. I mean, literally, they're running in overload constantly because there's so much data flowing through the Internet. And that brings to the next conversation is that there's a relationship between Mike McConnell, the retired Rear Admiral who's been chosen to replace John Negroponte as National Intelligence Director, and Booz Allen. Booz Allen ends up being one of the highly secretive private intelligence gatherers for the United States, and we've got a lot of information thanks to the Democracy Now! Website and a couple of authors that have done some research here. But it appears that Mike McConnell has been a leading figure in outsourcing U.S. intelligence operations to the private industry. McConnell, as you mentioned, was a former director of National Security Agency. He's the current director of the defense programs at Booz Allen. Now, this is a big engineering firm and accounting firm that essentially does high-priced work for major corporations, but we found out they're doing a lot more for government now. Under his tenure at Booz Allen, McConnell was deeply involved in some of the most controversial counterterrorism programs run by the Bush administration, including the infamous Total Information Awareness Program, the data mining scheme. McConnell's also been a leading figure in outsourcing U.S. intelligence operations to Booz Allen before he went to work for Booz Allen. This is typical of the revolving door things we have in Washington. Tim Shorrock, who is an author, independent journalist, currently working on a book about the privatization of intelligence, said Juan Cole, who was interviewing him, mentioned that McConnell is into talks about the integration of intelligence services because that's exactly what Booz Allen does. Booz Allen is one of the about, he said, 10 large corporations that play a very major role in American intelligence. Every time you hear about intelligence watching North Korea, tapping Al-Qaeda phones, or tapping U.S. phones, you can bet that corporations like these are very heavily involved. In fact, Booz Allen is one of the largest of these contractors, and guess who oversaw their contract with the NSA? It was Mike McConnell. So it's only natural he goes to work for Booz and Allen after he gets done with the National Security Agency. Now, the NSA is actually the lead agency in terms of outsourcing. This began long before 9/11. It began in the late 1990s when the NSA realized they were getting very behind the commercial world in technology. So essentially, the NSA has been leading this. Trailblazer was the very large program that they contracted with SAIC. That's another major mercenary company, Science Applications International Corporation, who bought out DynCorp and many other mercenary corporations. Their job was basically data mining. They wanted to get all the intelligence they get from the phone intercept satellites and get it into a form that analysts at NSA and CIA could read and understand, and that's what SAIC has been doing. The project is a $4 billion contract with SAIC to get this software down so that they don't have to listen to all these conversations, which is impossible. They can computer analyze it. Well, it's been filled with problems. He says that it just didn't work, and that isn't true. The CIA has been using it for years, and it does work. It just doesn't work as efficiently as what they want it to do. But the NSA is listening to all our phone calls, and you can bet that Booz and Allen is participating in that. McConnell's not only been involved in contracting with Booz and Allen and other companies, but he has been the chairman of the Alliance of Contractors that do business with the NSA. So that's who we've got as the intelligence czar now, very appropriate to the position given that he is an extension not of watchdogging the government, but of doing the same thing that he was doing at NSA and at Booz and Allen.
I think one of the most important things for people to understand is they actually are putting together dossiers on every American citizen. In fact, that was what the objection was to the Total Awareness Program, Total Information Awareness Program that they put together right after 9/11. It became very obvious that they were collecting not dossiers on terrorists or subversives, but every American citizen. And Congress told them they couldn't do it, so they just changed the name of it. But they've been doing it. They're watching. They're watching everyone. People can't believe this is really going on in America. But then I would ask, why couldn't it go on in America? Do the American people really value freedom today?
Well, let me just correct something that you said there. It isn't really a formal dossier on every individual citizen. For example, they do keep records on every individual citizen relative to phone records and credit card records. And those things are accessed anytime by any government agency, including police agencies. But in terms of formal dossiers, they reserve that for people like you and me, Dr. Stan. They reserve that for people who trigger words that are critical of government. They do keep dossiers on people who are critical of government. And those people are targeted. One of the most interesting things that's happening, and I don't watch much television, but there is a new program called 24 out that has its major showcase, a series now about the government, because of this terrorist thing, has to create concentration camps to put all these people and Americans in, backing up terrorist causes. And the whole series this season is going to be about interacting with how do we control and keep in prison, large prison camps, various people who are guilty of domestic and international terrorism. So even Hollywood, or especially Hollywood, is getting in on the provocation or getting American people used to, conditioned to, accepting the concept that concentration camps are a very natural process in government fighting this war on terrorism.
And I certainly agree. They use television to shape our reality.
One of the other interesting side effects of this incestuous relationship between the NSA and these private contractors is that the private contractors pay their analysts 3 or 4 times more. Now, they have little green tags they wear on their lapel when they go into the NSA, and they sit right next to the people who are running on government salaries, and yet they're making $200,000, $300,000 a year, and it's a problem where the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, actually put out a report saying, we're in trouble. The cause is that we're in competition with the very contractors for our own jobs. And that's the message Special Forces people get out of Iraq when they see the retired Special Forces people going to work for SAIC, DynCorp, and others at 10 times their own pay. So the U.S. is created by this infamous system of paying these outrageous fees to contractors. They've created the demise of their own military, which will, in fact, engender a draft. That's why Senator or Representative Rangel, Charles Rangel, the Democrat who has this bill constantly before Congress about resurrecting the draft, is in hot demand on talk shows. Talk shows have got the word we need to beef up and get people used to considering the fact that there will be a draft. And I think that's one of the reasons why they keep all of our military forces in this state of constant fatigue, stretched to the limit, so that even the military will say amen to a draft. It's looking that bad.
Well, I guess maybe that will get some of the American people to understand that they're involved in this. They're not having to pay for the war, and it's their son or their father or their brother who's going over there and being crippled for life or coming home. Almost a third of the people who come home now have some sort of chronic fatigue or whatever they call it, Gulf War illness, or call it what you will. But unless it's somebody close to them, they're not concerned. Maybe when they start drafting their sons and daughters, why, maybe then they'll realize we are all involved in what's going on, and good men and women do, of course, eventually have to pay for what they have not done. They are involved in the terrible things that our government is doing over there.
I think it's kind of a combination, Dr. Stan, of bad vaccines that they're being given, as well as depleted uranium and other chemicals and other things that they're subjected to in the military service. But these vaccines are getting more and more dangerous all the time as they develop the sophistication of teaching these vaccines to fool the immune system. See, the big problem with vaccines, and the reason, in fact, that people who get vaccinations survive them, is that the immune system eventually gets in there and kills the vaccine and removes it. And so as they keep developing more sophisticated vaccines to stop the immune system from eradicating it, they're actually fooling the system to start to attack itself, or at least the immune system starts to have the incentive to start to attack the places where these vaccines hide. And that, I believe, and many other medical experts believe, is the reason why autoimmune diseases are getting so prevalent, through the problems induced into the body through direct injection of these vaccines.
And, of course, they do use all sorts of experiments on our fighting men, as they did when the first Gulf War, and used something called squalene, an experimental, adjuvant put in the vaccine. They consistently lied it, and they said we would never have done that. But, of course, almost every person who has symptoms also has antibodies to squalene. So they're simply lying again, the weapons of mass destruction, or we're going to get Osama bin Laden, or so many of the other things that they've lied to them about. They're lying about the use of experimental vaccines on these young idealistic people who foolishly went into the military.
Well, you know, the number one reason why I suspect that the Iran war is in the offing is the number of Patriot missiles the U.S. is moving to Iraq. I found out this week that it's 600. Now, that's by far and away the most conclusive evidence that there's going to be a military conflict, because Patriot missiles have virtually no use in countering and dealing with the insurgency of the Civil War. They only have one use, and that's countering what they expect to be a rain of missiles, and that's only going to be coming from Iran. And that means that Iran has to be provoked into doing that retaliation, and what's going to provoke Iran is going to be, I think, the attack either by Israel or the United States or both, based upon some type of provocation. Even the outgoing head at the State Department of Terrorism is resigning. He's giving an excuse. He needs more family time, but he's getting out of Dodge. He says, we're going to have another 9/11 attack in the United States. We're due for one, and I think the United States needs one to justify turning on Iran. In fact, that's what we found out now is the purpose of the sudden visit of Vice President Dick Cheney to Saudi Arabia. Basically, he was talking about Saudis need to get behind here, that we're going to go attack Iran, and that Iran is a threat to Saudi Arabia. But you can bet you better be prepared for oil prices to double. If you're ever going to go and store some fuel, this is the time to buy it. It's probably never going to be any cheaper than it is right now. once Iran is attacked, I think we're going to see prices double in the price of gasoline and oil.
And I think anybody who honestly thinks we can just go in and do a nice little surgical strike there in Iran and not kill any Iranians, and they'll just say, well, we don't want to do anything at all, you know. We'll be nice people. I believe the Iranians are going to respond. And I believe they're going to kill an awful lot of Americans. And then they'll say, well, gee, those terrible Iranians, look, they've killed Americans. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to kill more Iranians. And that's how you get a major war going.
And that's how you get a draft.
Amen. Amen. Well, our guest this afternoon has been Joel Skousen. Would you give your website or email once again if people would like to get
it? It's www.worldaffairs.brief. Send me an email at editor@worldaffairsbrief if you want a free sample copies of the World Affairs Brief.
All right, fine. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
You know, part of the propaganda against Iran has been that Iran is responsible for killing Americans. This is the phrase that's hitting all the talk shows, and the reason for saying that is they have been saying that Iran has been shipping in the improvised explosive devices, the IEDs, and the triggering mechanisms, so that basically they're responsible for killing Americans. But one of the prime sources of the administration for this claim was former Assistant Secretary of State Martin Induk. Martin Induk's a prominent Israel firster. He served as U.N. ambassador to Israel. He's a member of the Middle East Strategy Group at the Aspen Institute. He rubs elbows with Henry Kissinger, Dianne Feinstein, and, of course, the Aspen Institute's a pet project of the Rockefeller Brothers and the Ford Foundation. It's where they have the major planning session for the Bilderberger leadership meetings. But as it turns out, that the IED explosive triggers are not from Iran at all, but from Britain. We now know that Britain is the one who developed those triggers and taught the IRA how to use that technology, and the same British agents gave it to the Iranians and the Shiites in southern Iraq, and that's then filtered into the various other insurgents. So this has got a long trail. It's part of the ongoing story, as you've covered before, about British agents infiltrating the FBI or the IRA and taking the number two slot, even killing other informers that were found within the IRA to show their loyalty to the IRA. That's how bad these British agents got, who were actually fomenting terrorism, building up the IRA rather than shutting it down.
As the oldest technique in the world, you create your enemy here in the United States. Why, we had a Communist Party, and so many of the members of the Communist Party were actually FBI informants. The number two man in the Irish Republican Army was a British agent. The co-founder of the Abu Sayyaf terrorist group over in the Philippines, this terrible terrorist group, was a man named Edward Angeles, who worked for the Philippine intelligence. People find it so difficult to believe what's going on is really going on. It's about time people learn from the past, because, of course, those who do not learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. Joel Skousen, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
And my pleasure as always, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. God bless. And this is Dr. Stan. We hope that you've enjoyed our interview with Joel Skousen, as we always do. And his World Affairs Brief is a wonderful source of information. It means that you don't have to, of course, analyze everything going on. Just go there every morning. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly first thing every morning I get up, I go through my emails, and then I go to World Affairs Brief and pull down the items off of that. An excellent source, as they go to websites all over the world to bring you the latest information. And what does this all point to? We're going to war with Iran. They're going to expand the war. It doesn't matter what the American people want. It doesn't matter what Congress wants. There is an agenda. And, of course, this is going to be carried out because behind everything that's going on today are powerful spiritual forces. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or get the book or the video. This is why you need to get a new book we're carrying called Satanic Crimes, which goes into the Bilderberger Group. and it goes into the Bohemian Grove, and it goes into the Skull and Bone Society, and introduces you to these secret societies that are not imaginary, they're real, but they're all bound together by a common goal, a one world government and a new world order, and the American people are never going to give up their freedom unless there is a major, horrible, cataclysmic event that destroys our cities and destroys our prosperity, and at that point the American people will surrender their liberty. And of course, if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, remember those words of Thomas Jefferson, who said, "God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. And I believe God is going to bring his punishment on this country, and I believe it's going to be because the good people have had so much, have forgotten his message, and we've allowed the wicked people to gain control of our government." And people said, "Well, what can I do?" There's a great deal you can do. I'm just one person. Joel is just one person. So many of the people we talk to on a regular basis are one person who is willing to make a commitment to do something. What are you willing to do today to preserve America, to preserve the freedom that we inherited from generations past for the generations yet unborn? Well, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Here, we encourage you to go there to read my newsletters. August, September, October, November, and December of the year 2006. Understand what really happened on September 11th, and it's not what you've been told at all. Get our interview, our new four-tape set, Why Did the Buildings Come Down? My interviews with John Field and with William Rodriguez. William Rodriguez was in the North Tower the morning of the attack. His life has been threatened. His office, his home has been broken into repeatedly. He's had death threats. Why? Because he tried to tell what happened that morning. Do you remember when he testified before the 9/11 Commission? Well, he did, but in secret, and they sealed his testimony for 50 years. Because they cannot allow the American people to know what happened that morning. Think of the implications if we found out that we had not been told the truth. Well, remember, you can get those newsletters. They're free up on the Internet. You can get our three little pamphlets we put together. Foreknowledge 911. We carry five videos on what happened. You can get them all together, I think, for $79.95, I think it is, something like that. Or maybe it's $84.95. Anyway, call the exchange, 1-800-544-8927. And that would be Press for the Truth, the story of the four widows who lost their husbands in the North Tower, and their effort to try to find out what had really happened, and how they, of course, were blocked at every turn, because they don't dare let the widows or anybody else know what happened that morning. And then, of course, 911 Mysteries, Terror Storm in Plain Sight, and The Day That Changed America Forever. Go up on the Internet and Google in Building 7 video, and you can watch it come down again and again and again. It was a controlled demolition. How did Osama bin Laden get those explosives into Building number 7? Ask yourself how the Arab terrorists were able to do that. As you watch it, you'll know it's a controlled explosion. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, and pray that we do not go to war with Iran.